5,000 niggers in this county who ain't registered to vote yet. And as far as I'm concerned, they never will. So you can tell your stiff suits up there in Washington, D.C. that they ain't going to change us one bit. Unless it's over my dead body. Or a lot of dead niggers.
Back on the air and we are live. I'm pretty sure a bunch of you are wondering where the F we been, but you know what? There is a trial going on. It's been delayed, by the way. It is delayed until the 23rd. But there are plenty of things that I need to discuss.
Delayed on our behalf.
Yes, delayed on our behalf. So we'll talk about that in due time, but I'm probably going to have conversations with everybody. I'm going to do a conference call very soon. With a lot of people, so, and you know, we'll let you know privately and personally what it is that's going on, because there will be some changes that are going to be made very soon, and I think that it impacts the future of race on the radio. And I'm sure there's some people out there who just don't know how to, well, they're not going to know how to react to what it is that I'm going to tell them, but I'm going to tell them nonetheless. But we'll have that discussion when that happens. Nonetheless,
if that happens,
you're right. If that happens, we'll talk about it. We'll get into that into some detail somewhere around the 9 o'clock hour. But I don't want to bore you, because it's Reese on the Radio, and we're back 1 minute after the hour on this October the 10th, 2012. You understand? Tomorrow is 10, 11, 12.
Yes, I do.
Oh yeah, I'm excited about that, baby. 10, 11, 12. I thought it was 8, 9, 10. It's never 10, 9, 8. But whatever, you get my idea.
Okay.
Anyway, I need to talk about somebody that is very, very dear, near and dear to the heart of producer JC. This individual is near and dear.
You
to the
have
heart.
To be talking about old Green Eyes.
Yes, I am. I am talking about this fine ass black woman. I'll be honest with you, I could give two damns about her before. But she showed that she's got not only moxie, but she's got some brains. She's got some brains, damn it. And she is willing to take the heat. And whoever her manager is or her public relations person is, they are a genius. Get your name out there, girl. And that girl, of course, is clueless actress, I should say. Stacey Dash. If you haven't heard, here's the breakdown. Stacey Dash on her Twitter page, Real Stacey Dash, at Real Stacey Dash. She wrote something about, you know, if you want to have a bright future, you need to vote for Mitt Romney. He's the future of this country. Real, real short and sweet. It was barely a sentence. And the niggas went nuts. Oh, these Negroes lost their mind. Even Samuel L. Jackson. Even Samuel L. Jackson was flipping on her. How dare you call yourself black and say you're voting for the white man? I guess it was okay when all the black people were voting for Bill Clinton. You could vote for that white man, right? But they went off on her. So she ended up on CNN. On Piers Morgan.
Of all places.
Yeah, I know, of all places. Now, this lying bloke, who seems to be outraged, I'm completely outraged that anyone would say to you, you don't have a democratic right to choose who it is that you're going to vote for. While this son of a bitch gets on his show and talks about, I don't see how a woman can vote for a Republican. I don't see how a woman can vote for. For Mitt Romney.
I don't see all the English accent.
I'm butchering the accent.
Okay.
That's the whole point. Okay. I don't see a woman could vote for. I don't see a person could do this. I don't see how a person could do that. Well, the things that are going on in this country, I don't see how someone could do this. He's always telling people how could that. Harry Reid, a liberal.
I couldn't understand any Mexican that would vote for Marco Rubio or any other Republican.
That's what they said. Can't see it. Piers Morgan is outraged. But I'll let you hear the interview yourself. But this is Piers Morgan outraged that somebody would say such vitriolic things to this poor woman, Stacey Dash. He's probably trying to get in her pants.
Don't say that. You don't know that.
What makes you think that Piers Morgan isn't trying to get in her pants?
What makes you think he is?
Well, I can suggest that he is. You said you don't say that.
I'm saying don't make that suggestion because there's no validity to that.
But who says that? She's beautiful. She's a woman. I believe he's single, if not homosexual. If not,
okay,
he is single.
Just play the audio.
What are you... You're debating with me about whether or not... If he's not homosexual, and he's looking at Stacey Dash, and looking deeply into those green eyes with that chocolate skin, I am certain that he is attracted to her. You don't think if Stacey Dash was right across from me, I wouldn't be looking at her in some sort of way that says, all right, she's very attractive. And if I was single, I wouldn't try to flirt with her? What? What guy wouldn't? What are you trying? You got this smile on your face. Say something. Am I out of my mind?
I won't reply to that.
Oh, yeah, no, you don't want to say that. Anyway, so here's Piers Morgan. Outraged. Bloody outraged. At what they're saying about Stacey Dash.
I mean, the extraordinary thing is that the tweet you put out under @RealStaceyDash, and your follower count's gone up, I think, by nearly 30,000, so congratulations.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You said, vote for Romney, the only choice for your future. Hardly the most scandalous thing ever. Let me ask you this. Do you think it's purely because you are a famous black woman, or is it because you are an actress, and there aren't many actresses, full stop, who are Republicans? What?
Well, he's right about that, but... Does he really think that that's a question here?
I don't know. I don't even know why he...
I mean, the first part of the question, you're a black actress. Do you think it's because you're a black actress? Or is it because most actresses are not going to shoot for a Republican? Well, it damn sure ain't the latter, stupid.
Well, duh.
It ain't the latter. I mean, just stick to it. Don't ask us some stupid made-up question. Let's start a narrative here. Anyway, here's Stacey. She responds.
What do you think has been the predominant factor in the fury?
You know, in the fury, I really don't understand the fury. I don't understand it. I don't get it.
Were you shocked? Were you saddened?
Yes.
Were you angry?
Shocked, saddened, not angry. Saddened and shocked. Really shocked. But you know what? You can't expect everyone to agree with you.
These people here, this is somebody who tweeted, you're an unemployed black woman endorsing Mitt Romney. You poor, beautiful idiot.
Poor, beautiful, that's
unemployed.
Unemployed, poor, beautiful idiot.
Well, let me tell you something. Being unemployed, I would hope that you would vote for Mitt Romney.
Damn right.
Or let me rephrase that. If you're unemployed and you would like to become gainfully employed, then you should probably vote for Mitt Romney. But if you want your Obama phone, go on and vote for Obama.
Oh, by the way, we've got to find this audio. We will find it. We've got to find this audio.
There's
hold on.
There's a remix.
Oh, there's a remix to the Obama phone lady. I've got to find it for you. Anyway, let's continue.
And somebody else just put, kill yourself, you old hag.
Wow, really?
I mean, really disgusting.
That's pretty really harsh.
You say you don't feel angry, but what do you feel? I mean, do you feel offended by this?
I don't feel offended because, I mean, come on, you know?
You're stupid.
Just come on, you know? I don't feel offended. I just feel that, you know, as a country, this is my choice. This is the man I want to lead my country.
Right. I mean,
my right as an American citizen. It's my constitutional right to have my choice of
yes.
who I want to vote for president.
And I think you should be allowed to have it.
And I chose him not by the color of his skin, but the content of his character.
Oh, that must hurt, nigga. Did that hurt, nigga? Nigga, did that hurt? Oh, she threw out Martin Luther King Jr. at you, nigga.
Those people that responded to her probably don't even know that that's from Martin Luther King Jr.
Oh, she said, I chose him not by the color of his skin, but the content of his character. What do you know about that nigga? What do you know about that? That must have hurt. That must have hurt you. I know it made you angry.
It made them angry, but it didn't hurt them.
I'm pretty sure that burned at you. I'm pretty sure that you had a burning sensation when you heard it. I am not voting somebody based on the color of their skin. I'm more educated than you. Oh, nigga, did that hurt. I think it hurt. But you notice Piers Morgan wouldn't even elaborate on that. He moved right on.
Have you heard from Mitt Romney at all?
Yes. Well, not Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan.
Paul Ryan rang you,
did I? Yes, he did.
What did he say?
He said, thank you so much for your support and that I was brave and that they support me. And I thought that was just so generous and kind, you know, lovely.
She said it was lovely. It was lovely.
She said it was lovely in an English accent,
she said,
too.
Exactly. Lovely.
It was lovely.
Lovely. She's mocking him. She's mocking the old Brit, Piers Morgan. It was lovely. You know, like you say. But then he asked her this. Like, it was going to happen. He asked her this stupid question.
Really?
Has any of the Obama campaign been on?
No. They haven't.
And why would they? Why would they? Obama's calling the white woman, Sandra Fluck. He called Sandra Fluck. All she got called was a slut. Stacey Dash is being told to kill herself. Kill herself. You think Obama's going to give her a call? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. People are calling her a dumb, oh, you beautiful idiot. Talk about war on women. Stacey Dash says that she's voting for Mitt Romney, and men and women are assaulting her on Twitter, telling her to kill herself, even having death threats against her. And there's a war on women? You're right. And it's being waged by liberals. Anyway, we continue.
What does it say to you about the state of the political discourse and debate in America that one innocuous tweet from you, purely because you're an actress and the color of your skin, sparked this kind of mayhem?
I think it tells me that our state, the state of our country is that we are not united. You know, we need to be united. And we all need to understand that we are all capable of achieving the American dream. And, you know, but that has to be something that is self-realized. And also to demonize someone for achieving the American dream is unfair.
And that's all it's about. She said we are not united, and you know what she said in that final statement? We are not united because there are people out there who believe that they should get the money from those who achieve. And the rest of us are just victims. And that was the stab directly at each and every one of those individuals. So I know that JC, who loves this broad, incredibly in love with this broad. Come on in, JC. Are you angered? Who do you want to stab, beat up, kill? Who do you want to slap some of these Twitter followers in the face? What's
no,
up?
In her honor, I think I want to change my last name to Dash, JC Dash. I think it fits.
Well,
I can't believe.
You've always liked Stacey
how
Dash.
Always
yeah,
have.
This much I know about you in the years that I've known you. I know you've always been crazy about Stacey Dash.
Always have. And you know what? I'm crazy about her now. I can't believe that she would go through the, how can I put it?
Criticism?
No. The liberal hate machine.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. It's a liberal hate machine. Simply because she voiced her opinion. Hell, they didn't even give Nicki Minaj that kind of stress that they're giving her. They're not stressing her. She's too blessed to be stressed. But I mean, they're not giving her that kind of hell that you know that they should have given Nicki Minaj. And she's like a black hip hop current central. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that being said, you know, consider this thing about Nicki Minaj. I understand you're saying it didn't get a lot of attention. But there was even, and you have to read, listen to me, look this up, JC. Look this up, or talk to Mike, and I'm sure he knows where the article is, but I'm positive it's the Washington Post. The Washington Post. Now, we're talking about, we know it's a liberal newspaper, but this is a nationally syndicated newspaper. It's like the Times. It's like the Wall Street Journal. Washington Post is read all over the country. The Washington Post did an article about a mixtape record. This isn't a record released by a record label. This isn't a song that was being put on the shelves at Target or Walmart. This was a mixtape verse on a mixtape record by Nicki Minaj when she makes the lines about, I'm voting for Romney, y'all are effing up the economy. Well, she uses Romney and the economy to rhyme. Whatever, go figure. But this became a Washington Post article where the writer is livid at Nicki Minaj for even giving the impression that she was voting against Barack Obama. Now, that to me is saying, now, to add on to that, their vitriol or their anger towards Nicki Minaj was because Nicki Minaj has influence in the African-American community, and she may be taking votes away from Barack Obama with that statement, therefore meaning in some way she should or needs to clarify her political leanings so that it does not affect or reflect on blacks who vote for Barack Obama. Which to me is in and of itself goes, okay, when the Dixie Chicks were ridiculed for criticizing President Bush, and if you know any background about that story, based upon the whole book, Shut Up and Sing and all that other stuff, you go to England, you tell everybody there you're from Texas, and you're not proud that the President of the United States is from your same state. And then you come back home, people are stomping on your CD, the radio stations are refusing to play your music, and the liberal media says, that's not right for people to boycott them in any way. These are people who decide that they don't like them and they're going to boycott them. They're not allowed to do that. I can't believe you got all of this pressure. I can't believe these people were criticizing you. But when Nicki Minaj does the same exact thing as a joke, it's, girl, you better get it together. You better make it right. And Barack Obama goes one step further to make this all in better perspective. To add all of that up, Barack Obama releases a statement about the Nicki Minaj lyric, stating that Nicki Minaj's rap character takes on many personas. I don't think that she was saying she supports Mitt Romney. I'm dead serious.
Wow. You know, he's pretty desperate right now. I mean, he could feel it. He can feel it. Now, you know me. I like taking some of the pictures off of the web and putting blurbs on them. Like putting some of the what are those terms? Mm-hmm. What's that term that I'm looking for? Captions.
Captions, right?
And I got a couple coming out this week. I'm not gonna tell you about it. I'll let you see them when you see them. But some of the ones that I've seen with regards to Stacey Dash and or making Nicki Minaj, it's like, well, more so Stacey Dash than Nicki. Well, I kind of feel as though, to a degree, the hood liked Stacey Dash. They didn't love her. She's not their Vivica Fox, their sister girl, you know what I mean?
Okay. But she was in 08, JC. She voted for Obama in 08.
How public did she make that? Because I don't recall hearing about that.
Well, everybody knows it, though.
They know it now. Yeah, they know it now. But come on, she's all kind of turncoats, Uncle Toms. I mean, look what she's married to. Her husband's French, Italian, something like that.
Right.
He's a non-African American. And her kids, believe it or not, for a black woman to have had kids by a white guy, her kids are pretty pale.
Yeah, but you know what? if you ask any African-American politician, anybody in the know, pundits, talk show hosts, when they talk about the word diversity, right? When they talk about the importance of diversity.
Right.
And I'll talk about this a little bit later, because there's that Texas college that you know, that's in the Supreme Court, and I'll get the story. I'll break it all down to you, talking about affirmative action.
Right.
When people talk about diversity, what I find incredibly odd is that African Americans in the entire spectrum constantly scream and holler about diversity, but here is a black woman who in her own choices is being diverse.
Right.
She is not segregating anything it is that she does. She is not saying, I'm a black woman, I'm going to marry a black man. She is not saying that when I vote for somebody, I'm not voting them just based on their color. When I make my choices, I'm not making any any choices based upon tribalism. It's based on, as she put it, content of character, based on virtue, on, you know, ideology, you know, all of those things. Here is the most diverse person ever as a member of the black community, and what do people who are ripping her apart do but tell her, you're not tribal enough, you're not black enough?
Well, that's just it's that project mentality.
You think it's project mentality?
Of course. You're different. You're not from our set. Go home. Don't let us find you here again.
Yeah, but...
Absolutely.
Okay. If that's the case, if Republicans are bigoted, right, if they're bigoted, homophobe, misogynist, right, if Republicans are that,
mm-hmm.
if it's true that if that's who they are, as far as depicted by liberals, if that's who it is that they are, my question is, if that's so deplorable, why is it that each and every member of those minority groups on the left side of things always rip someone apart for going against the goose step?
Right.
It's because, I mean, it never...
Well,
it,
you know what? Generally because many of them, especially those that are going to criticize and be harsh about it, they're uninformed voters as it is. And looking at the comments from a lot of people, and I've got like 1,300 Facebook friends.
Right.
And I look at the comments, and then I look at the source, and I'm like, okay, well, I'd expect that from so-and-so. That so-and-so is probably, I'm trying to think, I'm really not trying to give that individual away, but that person, he works at Wendy's.
Okay.
And I see my friends of mine that have commented on it, that work for Pratt & Whitney. And the difference in the comments were like night and day, although they're both basically saying the same thing. You know, I think it's about the uninformed, the ignorant, and if you don't agree with them and their narrative, then you're nothing. And on top of it, you're racist.
Yeah, but I don't understand how a party of diversity criticizes you for not being marginalized. In essence, you know what I'm saying? You have to toe a party line. You have to be a marginal individual who votes for diversity, which makes no sense to me.
No.
You know, that's the part that I think is the most hypocritical. I bring up that case all the time in California with Proposition 8 and gay marriage. You know, 70% of African Americans voted against, the law that would make gay marriage legal in California. But yet, if you ask any of them privately or even publicly whether or not they believe gay marriage should be legal as a civil rights issue, they would say, yeah, I think anybody should, you know, everybody should marry who it is that they should marry, and then privately become very marginalized. That's why I think that this is a very hypocritical thing. What they do and say publicly you know, is ardently different than what they do privately. As far as their political leanings go, it always baffles me. Ooh, LeVar Burton is on the O'Reilly Factor.
Here's another piece of work.
Should we jip it? No, I'm not going to jip it. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to a break because I want to hear what this moron has to say, and I ripped him apart last week. So I'm going to take a break. I am going to definitely go into – I have to hear this. I have to hear this ridiculous conversation. We'll take a break. Stick around. When we come back, we've got plenty of more stuff to get into. Here's Smog and Fog, DJ Dave.
Yo, man. Hey, you ever go to these bars, right? It's like a nice enough place, nice enough people. But the bartender thinks he's too fancy, man. You know, I'm like, hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus tip. Shit. Hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? I know your game is tight, but pour the drinks, right? At this rate, we'll be standing here all night out.
So there's this bar. Everybody's like, you gotta go. I'm at the door. What's the password?
I don't know. We entered through a phone booth or something crazy.
Oh, my God. They have the best drinks here. It's amazing.
Ooh, I saw the bartender. He looked like a nice dude. He was pouring a drink with one big-ass ice cube. I'm like, excuse me, sir. Could I get a beer? He gave me this look like, why are you even in here? I was confused. Did we start on a bad note? He's wearing waxing his mustache and a lab coat. I'm like, what's the matter? Is beer too boring? He's like, well, this cocktail dates back to pre-Civil War New Orleans.
Wow,
it's real cool, man. Can you suggest something tighter? He hands me this list that was typed up on a typewriter. I ordered something and he lit it on fire. Dude, you've been watching way too much Boardwalk Empire.
For real.
Hey, Mr. Mixologist.
Yeah.
Did you have to go to college for this? It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus tip. Shit. Hey, Mr. Mixologist.
What's up, man?
Did you have to go to college for this?
Same.
I know your game is tight, but for the drinks, right? At this rate, we'll be standing here all
this
night.
Is simple, sir, because I ain't nothing to muddle with. I got some burlesque dancers I'm trying to cuddle with. So whip some drinks up twice and double it.
Well, have you tried our aviation or Ramos Fizz?
Whoa. Are you even speaking English, Chief? Oh, rum and coke times two, capiche?
Oh, you must mean our handcrafted Cuba Libre.
If it's quick, bro, you're moving slower than instant
replay.
He dripped a half ounce of something I couldn't pronounce. And by that time, I clap a chick was straight down. I'll speak easy, boss, but I gotta call you bluff. You mix and drink, dude. Can't be all that, huh? Pour the liquor in and swirl it in a circle. But you're on them things like a Shea Boy commercial. I'll have a beer, guy, whenever you're done mixing. Second thought, boycott. Prohibition.
Hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? It seems like you got some knowledge. It's just a cocktail for $20 plus tip. Shit. Hey, Mr. Mixologist, did you have to go to college for this? I know your game is tight, but for the drinks, right? At this rate, we'll be standing here all night.
Hey, could I get a Sazerac, man? With muddled sage. No? Okay.
Yes, this is a smoked salmon-infused vodka with a few drips of ice plant tincture served over crushed lava rock.
What's star fruit? Hey, are you putting raw eggs in that? You don't... You can get there's no salmonella danger or anything like that?
Smog and Fog, DJ Dave, mixologist, just reached on the radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. Bottom of the hour coming up this second. Goodness gracious. I pulled my back in New York in the worst way. So if you hear me wincing in pain in any particular way, it's my fault. I was carrying a suitcase up a flight of steps in the subway, and I don't know what I did, but I pulled it, and it's bad on the right-hand side, and it's Oh, it's the worst feeling ever. It's just...
You should have seen him when he did it.
Oh,
but... People were stopping and looking because he was crunched down, crouched down, and making these moans and groans in the subway, 42nd Street. Like, is this dude having a heart attack or what?
It felt like a heart attack. That's how bad it was. It that painful. I thought that I wasn't going to be able to walk. I thought I was literally going to have to go to the hospital. It was a mess. It was complete freaking mess. I was, ugh, it's just awful. Anyway, LeVar Burton was just on Bill O'Reilly. I'm going to probably rip Bill for this one. LeVar Burton, stop it with the we need money for kids crap. LeVar, knock it off. We need money for kids. PBS is selling all of the merchandise for all of its programming, with the exception of its boring-ass TV shows. Okay? With the exception of its boring TV shows, they're making plenty of money off its children programming. Babar is paid. Okay? Elmo is paid. I don't know how many years in a row Elmo has been the best-selling toy during Christmas time, okay? You got mothers, sisters, brothers, uncles, fathers biting, stabbing, punching, shooting each other for a tickle-me-something. Stomping people. Yeah, exactly. Stomp the security guard to death over the latest toys on Black Friday. Knock it off, LeVar. Knock it off. You want to do some justice for me? Can we get the cast of Star Trek The Next Generation to do a decent movie? Can we do that? Insurrection was garbage. Can we do that? Can we get Jonathan Frakes, Marina Sirtis? Can we get any one of those people? Huh? To get a decent job? For crying out loud, Jean-Luc Picard is a voiceover on American Dad. Can we do something about that, LeVar? Seriously. Reading Rainbow. Give me a break. These liberals are always talking about how it's for the kids, but it's never about them.
Hell no.
Always about the dollar.
It may have even started out that way, but then it
always...
Well,
here's my question. They're saying that they want kids to get quality education, right? They want. So if you think that the $444 billion...
Million dollars
that PBS gets, if you really believe that it's going to do something for children, why don't you put it in a place that you think it'll work the most? In the schools. But I understand that you think, look, if kids are going to watch Sesame Street, right? Sesame Street has one of the greatest marketing brands there is. Sesame Workshop makes, what did Bill O'Reilly say, what, $360 million a year? And they're selling all their toys and all that other stuff?
They have Sesame Place?
Yeah, all of that stuff. They're doing fine. It's not, PBS can compete. Just like Nickelodeon, just like the Disney Channel, just like all of those things. And there's a reason why Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch and Grover and Kermit the Frog and Count Dracula or Count... What?
And when it comes to think
and
of it...
The Count. They call him the Count. I apologize.
Oh, Snuffleupagus.
Snuffleupagus, for crying out loud. There's a reason why these people are so damn popular. It's because they're doing fine in the marketplace.
But I don't, and they're not really, listen, I don't remember learning anything on that show.
Reading Rainbow or Sesame Street?
Neither.
I remember learning a lot on Sesame Street. I'm not going to go with you there. Sesame Street,
I probably did, but I don't remember it.
Although, I will tell you this, I remember Electric Company more. Sorry. Sorry. I remember more people. I don't know. I probably know. Okay, name me five human actors or even their names on Sesame Street. The people who played the humans who lived among the Muppets. Name me five. Come on. You can't name one?
Nope.
You can't name one?
Nope.
Come on, JP, help me out. Name five.
I can't name five.
Well, okay, how many can you name?
I remember the chick that played Rose from 227. I was married to the giant.
Oh,
the tall
okay,
black
know,
guy.
Yeah.
Wait. The woman who played Rose on 227,
mm-hmm.
She's married to whom on Sesame Street?
No. On Sesame Street. The bald guy with the mustache.
Okay. The bald guy with the mustache. You don't know his name either.
No.
Okay. Who ran the store that Big Bird was always in? The white man.
No.
You don't? Okay. How about the Puerto Rican girl?
Rita Moreno?
Oh, that's Electric Company. Come on, guys. Oh. Can I give you a hint? The most obvious Spanish name.
Maria?
Yes, Maria. Okay, so far, folks, between the two of them, JP and Gary, you got one. Nobody remembers Mr. Hooper, who owned the corner store?
No. Not that you mentioned it, yeah.
The bald black guy's name is Gordon. That ring a bell?
No.
How about this? Do you know who Gordon's famous daughter is? Well, she's not famous anymore, but she was famous for a while.
No.
Okay, I'll give you a hint. She was on a sitcom with Marissa Tomei. Because if I give you the other actress's name, you'll figure it out.
Marissa Tomei. What sitcom was Marissa Tomei on?
Come on, guys. Marissa Tomei played a roommate on a sitcom that was a spinoff of another popular NBC sitcom.
Marissa Tomei, she was on Facts of Life.
No.
Marissa Tomei wasn't on no damn Facts of Life.
Goodness gracious. Marissa Tomei.
A different world.
That's right. Marissa Tomei was on a different
Cream
world.
Cream Summer?
She was on the first season, and she was Dawn and Lisa Bonet's roommate. She was the wife.
Right.
That was Marissa Tomei.
I have to look that up.
Yes,
okay.
She was. That was before Vinny.
I like Marissa Tomei.
Okay.
That was before
Gordon's
my cousin's Vinny.
Daughter.
You talking about Cree Summer?
What's that?
Cree Summer?
Cree Summer is Gordon's daughter. Cree
oh, okay.
Summer, particularly hair. Black girl, light skin, big eyes. And
yeah.
Chris was also the voice of Penny on Inspector Gadget. I cannot believe this.
And Dejanay on the Proud Family.
Is she Dejanay in the
yeah.
Proud Family? Really?
Yeah.
Dejanay, what you know, girl?
Oh, I have to look that up. Are you serious? Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
So you guys don't remember. Okay. So, how about I think I'm not gonna come. So Maria, and I always forget the girl who used to play Rose. I'd always forget her name. I'll never ever get her name.
Sir, she just recently died of some kind of cancer, I believe.
Yeah, Mr. Hooper?
No, Rose.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I didn't even know that. I cannot believe you people. Do you remember the Electric Company at all?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
That's crazy. That's absolutely disgusting. That's probably, you know, hair.
Listen, I mean, I don't think that this. What Mitt Romney said was, if we have to borrow money from China, you're not getting $444 million to run no goddamn PBS station with Big Bird Because I, as president, am making a decision to say it ain't happening.
I agree.
We're not paying China an exorbitant amount of money in finance fees and borrowing fees and giving them more and more and more ownership of this country for freaking PBS. So PBS,
yeah,
sell your Elmos, get your shit together, and start funding. And that $444 million you get is a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
To you.
Absolutely.
And yes, it's a drop in the bucket to this country as well, which everybody keeps saying that.
Well, that's
but all of these drops in the bucket on the taxpayers' asses is getting to become too much of a load. It's already too much of a load. And I don't want my money going to PBS. So if you got to borrow from China to give it to them, don't.
I'll tell you what I saw on Facebook. I don't know if you guys saw this picture, but somebody posted this on Facebook. It's one of my friends. To the left, there was a picture of Big Bird. To the right, there was a picture of Ambassador Steve, his dead body being dragged in Benghazi. And in the picture, it said, on the left, it said, liberals are outraged about this. And it was over Big Bird. But on the right, they said, but don't give a damn about this. And it's interesting because everyone is talking about Mitt Romney, talking about Big Bird, but all of this information that has come out today about the Benghazi attack, about the fact that there was no protest, the fact that there was no riot that got out of control, that it was a coordinated attack initiated by members of Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda groups thereafter, found out that the police attack them did not do it based upon some 15-minute video, which I argue just as well as many others argued when this first broke out, when I said it was ridiculous. Now it's absolutely, positively known that the video had nothing to do with it. The fact that the White House had been trumpeting that remark for weeks, they had been saying that that's what it was about, that it was about the video. Now we've been caught red-handed in a lie and in a scandal, still about it 24 hours after the attack happened, and everyone is still talking about Romney and Big Bird, and ignoring the fact that this citizens killed Al-Qaeda, didn't get them security, did not have answers, did not do a proper investigation, and in no way made that man sick. Literally gotten killed by dropping the ball. And the only thing people want to talk about is Big Bird.
And then gave up classified information.
Oh, that's
because
right.
No one ever went back to the embassy to get any stuff that was left behind, and it was all types of information, all of this.
Well, my favorite part about this story, as far as exposing how disgusting this story is and why it needs to really be focused, is the fact that they said that what they normally do at the consulate or at the or at an embassy overseas is they create a security situation that can bar an attack for at least 1 hour, this giving officials there to destroy any particular document or sensitive documents that might be there. It gives them a window of 1 hour. People are rocking, you know, throwing in RPGs, you know, trying to bomb the facility, whatever it is, shots are being fired, they're trying to take over the facility. They have something that fortifies them for an hour so they can take all the documents that they need, take the zip files, whatever it is, and destroy them before they get into the hands of enemies. That's the bottom line. That's what it's there for. They said that security was so laxed at this, and it was revealed today during the hearings, security was so laxed that the consulate had a 15-minute window to protect themselves from being attacked and or killed. The fact that there was diesel fuel being used to burn and suffocate these people, they had absolutely no way to protect themselves. And none of this is being reported. Well, and if it's being reported, in the New York Times, it was on page A10. The Washington Post put a bogus headline so nobody would read it. The AP won't talk about it. Mainstream media is avoiding it like the plague, and this is a huge scandal. by the White in the face of the White House, and they're literally on their faces, is a complete cover up. I mean, it's the best way to put it. It's a complete cover up.
But Big Bird is
on the front page of everybody's mind, and I find it disgusting. Our number is 347-308-8701. Let's talk to my good friend who I haven't talked to in a while, Sally D. Up in Mass. How are you doing?
How are you? So you heard you're back out in New York, huh?
I'm just lifting a suitcase up a flight of steps, and I just pulled something, and it hasn't been the same since. It's only been a little over 24 hours.
It's not humorous. I mean, you got a lot going on. You're out in New York. You obviously don't want to be there. You heard you're back, and I got one more thing for you. It says here, New York City air made of rubber, dust, and dead skin. Did you know that?
Yes, I read the story on Drudge Report. Scientists have revealed, and it's a great story, too. So
it's just one of those things. I thought I'd finish the New York discussion with that little tidbit of information. But
That's great. So now what it was the guy who did this test? It was an air quality test for New York City. Is that correct?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure. I just know that
based on the results, what did they say was in the air in New York City?
Rubber, dead skin, and dust. I mean, dust, you know. Rubber is interesting.
Right.
Dust is dead skin. I mean, that's obvious, but rubber was interesting.
Yeah, so. But I know why the rubber's in the air.
Why?
Well, it's a commuter nightmare in New York City. How can it not be? I mean, everything about New York is a commuter hellhole. You know, in order for you to get around, you know, you have to do it in some way. Although people, you know, travel by train, but most people travel by bus and cab and car, and traffic is so, you know, it's so enormous there. And there's no way for those particles to escape. And the dead skin thing, yeah, that goes without saying. Because if you're in New York, you're probably scratching more than usual.
Yeah.
That's just my
And bathing less than usual.
Yeah, it's not just a little factoid of no consequence, but, you know, so you touched on a couple topics, the whole issue with this actress that's now getting beaten up. The only thing I have to say about that, I'm kind of fascinated by the whole, and we talked about this when we talked about the election a long time ago. And, you know, I said that I believe this election, I don't believe it any longer based on that last debate. But mm-hmm. prior to that, it didn't matter. It was going to come down to race. People were voting on race. People were voting on racial lines for the most part. Because I think as a country, we act along racial lines. I really do believe that. And so none of this really surprises me, these kind of things. When you see Hollywood stars rip this actress, it's like a Samuel L. Jackson. It's kind of interesting because, you know, here's a guy, he's certainly not suffering. He's assimilated himself into a very unique society that very few people have any insight into. It's a bit of he's a poser. You know, I could see the man on the street who's maybe struggling. I don't live I don't live in his shoes, but I could see maybe some anger there. But, you know, I don't know where Samuel L. Jackson comes off saying this kind of thing. And I think, you know, maybe you have better insight than I do. You grew up in New York, right? Or you lived in New York most of your life.
Yeah, I grew up there. I believe
we talk a lot about race, but I never asked you. I mean, you would admit there's a lot of racism out there on both sides. Do you disagree?
There are portions about this that I agree with and portions that I disagree. As far as racism goes, what I agree, as far as the racism issue, let's take it from one perspective from the other. Do I believe that there's a strong, there's a large amount of racism within white America? No. And when I say the word strong, and that means is like, is there a personal animus towards people of other races? No. Here's why. I believe that there are white people out there who believe in their hearts that they believe that society is a cruel place. So they racism for them is very compartmentalized. So when a white father's daughter dates a black guy, his concerns are a little personal, slightly. Oh, she's dating a black guy. His concern is, are there members of my family who will look at that? You know, it's a curiosity, fear sort of thing. It's like, it's very, very, it's standoffish to the sense of saying, oh, how are people going to react to that? They're always curious. They're worried about what their standing is going to be, what their station's going to be amongst people in their lives. How do I introduce them to things of art? What if their culture is different? It's that sort of fear, if you get my meaning. There's that. I want to use the word cautiousness. Now, most people would deem that as racist. If you're cautious about another person's race, you're automatically racist. Most people say that. I refuse to put that in the same category. But if we want to say that it's racial, that's because we know what our society is like, and we know that there are people out there who will judge you based upon your race. And I believe more white people have that issue than they do with outright racist, I don't like niggas, I don't like black people, I don't like, you know, I don't like spics, I don't like any of that.
Right,
there's
right.
A larger group of those out there who want to accept everyone as a friend and as a colleague, but once it starts to get into their personal lives, that's when they start to put their hands up and have a little bit of resistance. With Asians are traditional by nature. Tradition means more to them than anything. Having been one of the groups that have been around, you know, the longest since civilization, keeping their bloodline pure is it's more than idyllic. It is rooted in their culture. Would most people call that racist? I wouldn't. But when they tell their daughters, of course you can't marry that man. We have a tradition. We have a family name. We have to keep a lineage. That's the argument there.
Steven, you just touched on a really, and I don't mean to get too far deep, but this might be a topic for another show.
No, I love the question.
So what you just touched on is a real big topic, because that whole thing of, you know, people love to say, hey, I'm not a racist, until it's, you know, their daughter marries or wants to marry someone of a different race.
Right.
And that ties into what you just said. I would say that the statement you just made alone, that most people do view, if you viewed a mixed marriage baby as a problem because you didn't want to break a lineage or some kind of a tradition, I think most people in this country do view that as racism. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that, because I don't think that's what racism is. But I think a lot of people, just even saying that, they think you're a racist. They think there's some underlying reason. It's more than just cultural.
Right, but no. So, but see, that's what I say about as far as racism is concerned. When I hear the word racist, to me, racism to me, I mean, in the essence of the word, is to suggest that your race is beneath mine culturally, socioeconomically, or even socially. Did I say that twice?
Yes.
Okay. So socioeconomically, and I would say even I would probably even say smarts or intelligence is to say that those people are beneath me because of their race. In other words,
okay,
if I'm white, you're black, you're not as smart as me, you're not as socially you're more socially inept than I am. I have a better standing or station in life. You're beneath that. That's, I believe, is outright racist.
I totally agree. So here's where I'm going with this, and then you just led right into it.
Go ahead.
Help me understand why a person of any ethnicity that can benefit from affirmative action takes the position that if you're anti-affirmative action, you're a racist. See, because I see it the other way. I look at affirmative action as being a program which looks a person in the eye and says, we don't feel you're good enough, right enough, and so we're going to give you some points in a test. We're going to put you in this category. To me, that's the ultimate insult. Yet, the very people, it seems to me, that are so against, when you speak out against affirmative action, it's as if you're making a racist comment. Do you get where I'm coming from?
I know exactly where you're coming from, and this is where I believe most people have a problem with arguing affirmative action. I believe, Sal, you're looking at it from the wrong way, and I'm going to give you another perspective. And when you hear it, tell me whether or not this, and I don't want to use the term enlightens you, or whether or not a bell goes off in your head when you hear this. The other perspective of affirmative action coming from those who are proponents of it, advocates of it, this is what they see affirmative action. It is never spoken about. But this is where it comes from, the genesis of it. White people in this country have had the cultural, financial advantage for over 200 years in this country. For the sake of all of that progression within the white community, we must now put a stop, pretty much a stoplight, on the progression of whites, let blacks catch up, and any whites that fall to the wayside of that stoppage of white progression, so what? We're just trying to get black people to catch up. You hold out, take the menial jobs, take the lower salaries, take the smaller education, become dumber. Don't be as interested as getting up the corporate ladder as much. We need the blacks to get all of those jobs or as many of those jobs that we can so that we can say that blacks have progressed to a level and then it's an even playing field. And then when you get back into the system, then you can fight on what we would consider an even playing field. They believe that because whites outnumber blacks or whites outnumber Latinos, we need to put a stop on their progression, allow everybody else to catch up, no longer make them a majority, now part of the minority, and so that everyone has this sort of melting pot of progression. But in order for blacks to catch up, you have to stop white progression. It's the same case when I deal with liberalism on the level of when I said about the women's power movement. Men could be at tier 10. Women could have been at tier 3 back in the 1940s. The objective of the women's right movement, the Gloria Steinems and all of them, was to not to ensure that women rose to tier 10. It was, let's lower the bar for men by demonizing what they do. Oh, misogyny? That's gone. Tier 9. Oh, what's the name? Having the right to vote or making decisions in the household over women? Take that down. Tier 8. We demonize and marginalize men. We bring them down to tier 5. So women are at tier 3. In order to make it even, we have to diminish the progression of the opposition. That's what affirmative action is about. Stopping whites in their tracks so that blacks can move up, because they believe that blacks can't keep up with their counterparts. So now what we need to do is stop them from progressing so that blacks have a full-on advantage to move ahead. They'll never tell you that they're trying to stop whites. They'll only tell you that if you don't believe that blacks deserve more of a chance, you're a racist. You just want whites to have more than blacks. You don't believe in black progression. Truth is, we believe about progression for all. But for them, it's stopping one so the other can gain. Every liberal idea is like that. Every liberal idea is about that. Whoever the enemy is, target it, put a stop to it, and then move up. Gay marriage gets its positioning by demonizing Catholicism, using the Boston child rape scandal, using that to marginalize and demonize, and then behind it, trumpeting gay marriage, trumpeting homosexuality, by saying the Catholic Church, they don't want us to be married, but they're going around raping little boys. Oh, Catholic Church, marginalized, demonized. Gay marriage, look at that, and they go, look at these poor guys. They're trying to, and look at the villains who are trying to stop them, a bunch of child molesters.
So you're absolutely right. And the other side of that, the effect of that, is that you then have some people succeeding that succeeded on their own. And you have some that would not have, but are now in positions they do not belong in. And what that ends up doing is really proving the point that of the people who are the doubters. So you put someone in a position who's not capable. You get them there, okay, fine, you got them there. But they can't do the job. Well, now people around them, you know, continue to espouse these views that are counterproductive to a society that gets along. Because if you've got a guy that's above you and he's not doing the job, you're going to be happy about that? You're going to say kind things? You're going to think kind thoughts about that? I don't know that the benefit outweighs in the long run. It's a failed, it's a bad way of going about it. I'm not saying nothing has to be done, but the whole idea of it, I think, is poison. So,
wait.
I mean, I got on affirmative action. The initial point was, I think a lot of this anger, a lot of the anger comes from this very basic, like you just touched on. You know, the white man has been in charge. Look back in the 1800s, what was going on, and they got this big lead, and they're just, you know, it's not fair, and they're angry. And so when they see anybody of any ethnicity saying something positive about a white candidate, they pounce. Look at the Snoop Dogg. 10 top 10 list of Snoop Dogg. I realized that that was done, in his eyes probably, as some form of comedy. But, you know, the whole thing about the N-word, I don't use it with my black friends. I don't like, I just don't feel comfortable. It's not funny to me. It doesn't, you know, I can think of a lot of funny things to say to my friends if I want to razz them. That's not funny to me. Whether it's on Snoop Dogg saying it, white N, or you know, the opposite side of it. So you see something like this, and although he probably thinks it's hilarious, you know, so many people look at this, and you're going to get two different reactions. You're going to get people that are giving him, you know, high fives and saying, you're the man, and you're going to get other people who look at it and say, this, you know, the hell with them. This is how they think. This is how they are. So
Sal, let me give you two words that exemplify exactly what it is that you just touched on about affirmative action and giving everyone a chance, okay? And and when I heard this from Rush Limbaugh, and I listen to him as often as I possibly can. But when he expressed it, I almost fell off my chair because it made absolute sense. If you want to understand liberalism and its failures, I'm going to give you two words that the American public just dealt with recently. If you want to see affirmative action at work, the two words are replacement refs. Think about that. Guys.
In what context? Meaning the mix of people that work?
I'll give you the context. Anybody should be able to do their job, right? These were referees from Division D, Division A. Some of them were high school refs, you know, D division college refs. These guys were not in, you know, they weren't college refs. These were high school and secondary college refs in football. I think Al Michaels was talking about Sunday Night Football. I think week one, he said that the head ref on the Sunday Night Football game was a shop teacher, was a home economics teacher or something like that, and they couldn't stop talking about it. Here's what I'm saying. This guy was a referee. This guy refereed football games before, but no, they weren't at the professional level, but he can read just like any other ref, right? He can read the rules and study them just like anybody else, right? He's just as qualified as anybody else, right? Well, as it turns out, ladies and gentlemen,
wrong.
The refs weren't qualified. Sure, they worked in other games. Sure, they read the manual. But here it goes to show you that not just anybody can do a job. The regular refs that are on the who are back now, the real refs who are there, these guys have to go through 5 years of training. They've got to be the best ever. that ever did this job. You always get the best to do the job, so you don't have what it is that we had on that game against with Green Bay against the Seattle Seahawks. You don't have the debacles like that because affirmative action doesn't work.
So let me ask you this real quick. So you know that the liberal, a lot of the liberal establishment are highly educated. So the last place I worked, I'll leave it nameless. I was walking through the hall, and they had this big thing going on in the cafeteria and with all these big signs and balloons. And I looked over. I was trying to figure out what was going on. I see a lot of people mingling, and there's a big sign there, and it says, Diversity in Action. And I looked at the sign, and then I looked around, and I'm thinking, they've got this big sign, Diversity in Action. I don't see any diversity in this building, first of all, so I kind of thought that was humorous. But the other thing about it was, why is diversity celebrated instead of a sign that says excellence in action? Where have we lost this as a country who prided itself on excellence, individual achievement? It's how we won wars. It's how we, you know, put men on the moon. We are losing, and yet liberals are smart. They're obviously educated when I say they're smart. They're book smart. Clearly there's something wrong with them. But where does this – they must see that when you don't celebrate individual excellence or excellence in general, that there's a price to pay as a society, regardless of what race you are.
I want to put it to you this way. If these people, if liberals really believe in diversity, if they really believe in diversity, why are they still talking about it? If they just do, because if they're a diverse people, if where they live is such a utopia, if it's really really that case that they're a diverse people, why does it have to be promoted so much? And it's very simple. It's promoted because they need something to symbolize their diversity instead of exactly. Instead of acting on it. I used to have this big quote back in my early radio days about the equal opportunity employer. And I said, do you ever wonder why a help wanted ad always says that there's equal opportunity, this is an equal opportunity employment agency? And they go, yeah, I always wonder what it is. I guess they're trying to say that they'll accept anyone. I said, but shouldn't that be a misnomer? I mean, really, shouldn't that be? Is there anybody in the world who really believes that they don't get a chance just upon their skill level? Because to me, it's a non-starter. I don't need anybody to tell me you're an equal opportunity employer. I'm going into that office thinking that's a given. To say that you're an equal opportunity employer implies to me at some time or at any time you may not have been. I think you're bringing attention of negativity towards yourself. But
yeah,
liberal
shorts, I think that's where a lot of this stuff is coming from. It's just coming from the anger that is still there from all races and ethnicities. And each side has their own set of issues, right, that they carry in, that they hold dear, that they hold emotionally charged inside of them, and then something happens like this, and everybody's out on Twitter, and they're just flaming. You know, it's how email flame wars start in offices. Somebody says something that touches somebody in a certain way, and bam, 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 it's on. And that's how this kind of thing. It's just this pile-on mentality. It suddenly becomes an issue unto itself. It starts getting away from what you're even talking about, which was this girl's statement about supporting Romney possibly, and I don't know the whole detail, and it gets into, well, we have still black and white issues in this country, and, you know, whites need to think this way and blacks need to think this way, and it's just, it's never going to end, man.
Hey, you know what? You know, it's a great question to ask someone who says that, Sal, if you ever, ever hear someone say it. The best question you can ever ask them is, what's a black issue? And you know what? If they say something like unemployment, you say, that's a black issue?
Exactly.
Like, really? Like, how is that essentially diversified to the black people? Unemployment, education? Really? Why white people aren't interested in education? Oh, they educated already.
Really?
Yeah, they were born that way. Don't you know that?
So my 4-year-old son has got a college degree already. Education is not important. That essentially belongs to black people. They never, ever know what a black issue is because there's no such thing. No such thing. You know, when they, you know, and they say, what about living in the hood? And I know you don't like the use of the word, Sal. I'm sorry that I have to use it sometimes, but my argument.
No, it's.
I love using it, but you know my response to that always is, nigga, move out. You know, it's
you
like,
know,
there is
know,
other.
I'm with my Italian friends. We call ourselves, you know, the typical Italian ethnic slurs constantly.
Right.
What I'm saying is, I think when you go across, you know, when you go across, and if a white guy says it to his black friend, or if a black friend says to his wife, I still think it's okay if those two friends are okay with it. It's just not my thing. You can call me anything you want, but I believe as a people, in the long run, the sooner we stop, you know, using this these issues that are so emotionally charged, the
right.
better we're all going to start getting along. Now, that's not to say that two friends can't decide how to talk to each other, but I just for me personally, it's just my thing. I'm uncomfortable when I hear people saying it on the air, even as a joke. Not when you say it, because you're talking about a personal experience and you're making up characters and you're talking about people you talk to. It's a different thing. You're not calling someone directly. You get one.
Yeah, I never ever do, and I appreciate you saying that, because that's exactly where it is that I'm coming from. That's exactly where it is that I'm coming from.
I don't want to take too much of your time. I wanted to shift gears on this real quick to this Libya thing.
I do. Okay, go real quick, because I'm going to take a break.
Go ahead.
What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on that?
Two quick points on it. Did you hear that Clinton's signature's been found on a document acknowledging that they knew there was an issue prior to the actual attacks?
Where did you read that?
I didn't read it. I think it was – it might have been – it wasn't Rush. It was somebody I listened to in the morning that – they think they have Clinton's signature on a document and that this thing's going to blow up. The second part is that apparently the security was lax. Oh, I know who it was now. It was Colonel Dave Hunt.
Oh,
Colonel
Hunt,
was
really?
Our show today. He also said that the security, there may be something coming out about Stevens had a request for lax security because of something he was doing down there might have been in the personal nature that may come forward. The bottom line, I think this thing is going to get really ugly, really ugly. It's not going away. There's enough trail out there that it's just going to get nasty.
I was telling Mary this earlier today. I honestly believe this is going to be the October surprise.
Well, let's hope it's October, because if they hold the documents back long enough and they stall, they'll get past the election cycle before this thing really blows up.
I don't think it's going to happen. There's too much information that's out there right now. And to be honest with you, they've got 20 days. And I don't think that the press, although there are some press that's sort of ignoring this, but I don't think so. I think that this is not going to have a choice but to be one of those things that really, really affect the President of the United States to the point where he's going to have to come out and say something about it, because remember, the next debate is a foreign policy one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I can't wait for it. And, you know, you're absolutely right about the media here, because the media will not resist a story like this just because they like Obama.
Oh, no. Absolutely not. And you want to – I'll tell you like this. Here's an interesting thing. Okay? Two very key factors about this. Now that there's this story lurking around, and again, I am not confirming this story, but the fact that there are two very major parts components of this, the fact that I don't know him personally, and I'm not saying this to disparage him, you know, unfortunately he's died, but the fact that there were those rumblings that Chris Stevens was gay, and I don't know whether or not he was, but there are a lot of rumblings around. I mean, that's his personal life, and again, I'm not disparaging him. If he was gay, regardless of the fact. But the fact that he was gay, if and indeed his parents come out or somebody comes out and says, you know, he was a gay person, he understood the fact that gay rights were not in Libya, he was there, he loved the Libyan people, blah, 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 and the fact that he was murdered and the fact that lacked security and this guy begged for security and he did not get it, if it turns out that this White House played a role in not getting him enough security and he ended up dead, the media loves very key components of this. Lax in government that involved terror, that's they love that stuff. But if a gay person died behind it, you know the media won't let that go.
Yeah.
A gay man dead?
That's what I'm hearing.
You know, exactly. So the fact that all of those components are in this, some people in the media who have this hard leftist view on homosexuality, and this guy was a nice guy, a patriot, a good man, decent man, loved those people in Libya, was trying to liberate them in all, and I sorry for the alliteratives, but the fact that he was there trying to do that, and he died, and this government covered it up, yeah, that love affair with Barack Obama will die immediately.
I could keep going on. Take a break. And if you want to come back, we can. If not, I'll check in and just listen in.
You got it, man. I appreciate you calling in. We'll take a break, folks. Stick around. It's Reset on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Put on your red shoes and dance the blues.
little David Bowie, less dance. I could have played the P. Diddy Mace version, but
I like that version.
You do?
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. You're breaking my heart, Mary. Really?
Sorry.
You're the type of person who likes it when P. Diddy takes a classic song and rips it apart, like a Sting record or The Police or something like that when he did that Missing You thing for Biggie
Small. I like
Small.
That, too.
Oh, of course you did. Of course you did.
I'm a girl.
20 minutes after the hour right here on Reese on the Radio, October the 10th, 2012. Okay, folks, I don't scour YouTube like many people do. I have my set sort of settings. I got Jimmy Kimmel on mine. I've got Project Veritas. By the way, they've got a great new video out. You've got to check it out. Project Veritas. That's George O'Keefe. And his group, they got a great new video out now. I'm probably talk about it tomorrow and play some of the audio about voter fraud. So this one video that was on YouTube that we played and everybody knows is the woman who's I believe she's an SEIU labor worker. She was in Cleveland, Ohio at a Romney rally. They were outside protesting Mitt Romney. They brought him out there on $11 an hour. They bust him in. And this one woman gained national attention for talking about
the infamous Obama
phone. I guess over the Obama phone. If you don't remember it, of course, we have the audio here. And here she is, the Obama phone.
You got Obama phone?
Yes, everybody in Cleveland, low minority, got Obama phone. Keep Obama in presidents, you know. He gave us a phone.
He's gonna do more. How
do
you give you a phone?
You sign up. You're on food stamps. You're on Social Security. You got low income. You disability.
Now.
You got low income. You disability.
You disability.
Obama gave us a phone. He gonna give us more.
My favorite part about this, as I've told you plenty of times, everybody in Cleveland, low minority, didn't know there was a difference. Anyway, so the inventive people on YouTube, love you all. I give you credit when you're great, when you're brilliant. This time you were great. So that audio, which you just heard, of course has been turned into a music video.
Remix.
They've remixed it, folks. Here it is now. Obama phone. I can't take it. Oh, come on, load up. Somebody took it down? Please don't tell me they took it down.
You got Obama phone?
Yes, everybody in Cleveland, low minority, got Obama phone. Keep Obama in presidents, you know. He gave us the phone. Wrong guy.
Okay, you have to watch the video because they've even got Hillary Clinton dancing with the black woman. It's great. Now, I told you.
A black woman backing it up on Hillary Clinton.
Yes, backing it up for those of you who do not know that. You have to see the video when you see the black woman dancing with Hillary
Clinton. From the windows to the wall.
Okay, not everybody's going to understand you. Anyway, I said from great and I said to brilliant. This, my friends, is a brilliant remix of the Obama phone. Better than anything.
Here. You got Obama phone?
Yes, everybody in Cleveland, low minority, got Obama phone. Keep Obama in presidents, you know. He gave us a phone.
How do you give you a phone?
Keep Obama in presidents, you know. He gave us a phone. He gave us a phone.
should be in the club immediately. You have got to put this song in the club. Absolutely. Now, JC, have you heard this yet? Please tell me you've heard this already. Jay?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Yeah, did you hear this song yet?
No.
You've got to watch them.
Really?
All you have to do is just type in on YouTube, Obama phone, and both remixes are there. You've got to check them out.
Wow, I'll check it out right now.
They are brilliant. Hey, our good friend Dennis is on the phone. Hello, Dennis. How are you?
You bastard. You know you're sending me to the hospital, you son of a bitch.
What?
You know why? You fractured my funny bone. The Obama phone tops it all.
Wait, you have to give it to the inventive people on YouTube. These guys actually took the time out to remix this woman.
And I was wondering, how the hell did you screw your back up? Was it that much of a temptation to try to reach over and try to find a rib or a piece of fried chicken or a watermelon on an escalator in New York? The hell's the matter with you?
An escalator? There's no escalators in New York. Are you kidding me? Let me tell you something, okay?
Yes, Mary, what is it?
That we walked so many flights of stairs.
Yeah.
All day long, we were up and down. His sister lives in an apartment building in Manhattan, in Harlem, and we went to her apartment. And I was almost dead by the time I got up to the top of the stairs.
My sister lives in a six floor walk up. And
there's no affirmative action for escalators just for you folk?
Exactly.
No. And the thing is that we were at 59th Street at 59th Street Columbus Circle in Manhattan. We were coming up from the train station to go meet with my sister. And as I was coming up the top flight of the steps, I was carrying Mary's suitcase. As I brought it up the steps, I don't know what I did, but something, I guess I pulled the suitcase up to bring it onto the top step so I could start rolling it. And in some way, I twisted my body to the right. That was what caused me to the spasm, I guess, in my back on the right side.
Well, all the brothers in Harlem have said it's your own fault, nigga, for moving to the right to begin with.
Dennis! Yes, it was. That's the whole thing. I should have just dragged the thing up the steps, Dennis. That's my problem. I should have dragged it up the stairs.
Well, you've been dragging your ass around Harlem for many years. Oh. All caught up with you.
And no, that's the interesting part. We took the wrong train uptown, and we ended up on the west side.
Uh-oh.
Where everything is sort of like a brownstone, but it's a walk-up front steps brownstone. Very, very classic sort of 1920s Harlem. You can see those old photos of the Harlem, Harlem brownstone with the steps that come all the way down. They've got basement apartments right underneath the brownstone or first floor apartments.
Like
underneath
the old
the
I Love Lucy set.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant homes. They're beautiful. So we're walking from that west side to more towards the east side, towards Lenox Avenue. And you hit this one block and the entire town fundamentally changes.
No, you go across this avenue.
Incidentally, it's Adam Clayton Powell Jr. Boulevard.
Yes, you cross over that. And
that should tell you something.
Yeah, it's a complete. I mean, when it changes, Mary looks at it and she goes, "Ooh, this is definitely a different neighborhood." And we just walked two blocks. It completely changed. And
are you
it's
far
amazing.
Away from Sylvia's?
I went from one right to the other one. There was no in between.
Yeah. No slight progression, no slow progression whatsoever.
How far away for you from Sylvia's so you could have some soul food?
Interesting. We were on 135th. Sylvia's is on 125th. So we were relatively 10 blocks.
You know, if it wasn't for white people, you'd get in trouble.
Hey, listen to me. Dennis, now, that's another thing.
Wait.
Speaking of Harlem, there are more whites in Harlem today than I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yes,
I've
there
heard
are.
It's been changing.
In Harlem for a short amount of time on 145th.
No,
between Convent
Harlem,
and Nicholas.
Harlem has really changed. There are the gentrification in Harlem is astounding. And I always say this one joke, and I'm sure I've said it on these airways before. My brother and I were at my sister's house one weekend, and we went down to 125th Street to go to the Sprint store. And this guy ran up the street from behind us, and he sort of like ran in between both of us as we were walking up the streets, and we sort of like, we were startled because somebody ran in the middle of us. And when he ran to the corner, and my brother immediately started laughing, and I said, I cannot believe it. I'm in Harlem, and I'm seeing a white guy running, and it's only for the bus. And sure enough, that's what he was doing. As we're looking around, there are people outside. There are outdoor cafes in Harlem, and we're talking on Lenox Avenue and 125th Street. Outdoor cafes, people outside with their computers, sitting around chatting, talking, drinking wine.
What do you attribute this to? White people, or just the fact that people just got fed up with the crap and they're taking back their community? Or what do you think it is?
No, you know, Reese, of course, made that comment like, oh, my God, I can't believe this. I've never seen this many white people in Harlem. I said, yeah, I have not either. But then I turned around and said, it is also daytime. It may not be that way. You know,
you're bad.
Well, I think she might be a little accurate.
It was 7:30. No, it was about 7:30 in the morning. You know, I mean, people were going to work.
Well, the brother's not awake that late.
Well, you're probably absolutely right about that.
You know, we screw around on this show and have a lot of fun, but seriously, what Sal had said earlier about affirmative action hits the mark. If people are to be treated equal, there is no need for affirmative action, at least not anymore in 2012. Maybe in the 60s and the 70s when we had Bull Connor and the fire hoses, but not anymore. The point is you have to have equal opportunity for the opportunity to get something, to be ahead, not having it handed to you.
Well, if,
and that's why your show exemplifies that we can screw around and make no difference what the hell skin color you are. You're an equal opportunity offender.
Yeah, exactly.
Which does nothing but keep racism going, because the black man will never think that the white man gave them anything because they deserved it. They gave it to them because of affirmative action.
Yeah, because of the color of their skin. I don't want anything big. If they think it's because I should get something for the color of my skin, I don't want it. But
of your skin, was there any uprisings among the Indians on Columbus Day observed?
Exactly. And it's not like
you were
there.
I was just wondering, that would be a hotbed for protests.
Let me ask you this. The remark that I made to Dennis, I apologize, Dennis. The remark I made to Sal earlier, did you hear that when I said about the whole argument about anyone who is opposed to affirmative action is always called, you know, called a racist? And I said to him that he's looking at it from the wrong perspective. The idea of affirmative action is to stop whites in their tracks so that, in essence, what they believe is that blacks can move up and keep up with whites. So in order to do that, we can't allow whites to continue to become gainfully successful. We have to stop whites in their tracks and then move blacks up so they can catch up with them. So,
well, let me ask you this, Reese, from a black perspective.
I want to say this. The reason why let me give you a breakdown of why I believe this wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
Is in New Haven, Connecticut, the argument about those firefighters. When the firefighters were not allowed, the white firefighters and one Latino were not allowed to become lieutenants because no blacks had actually passed the test and made those ranks, is a perfect example of what it is that I'm illustrating here.
Right.
Is that let's stop the whites from getting that promotion until blacks can achieve the same thing. So the whites were stopped in their tracks, were not allowed to get their promotions because no blacks made it in the thing. And I believe that that's how affirmative action today works with liberals. That's just my argument.
So my question is also, since blacks are becoming the minority, and the Hispanics are supplanting blacks, I understand there's some friction between the blacks and the Hispanics when it comes to now affirmative action and set-asides. Mm-hmm. That they think that they're coming ahead at the expense of blacks, and there's a lot of resentment. Do you see that, or is that just more media hype?
I believe that there's a lot more media hype to that, but the resentment issue is, look, there was truly a time when blacks who were just as educated as whites could not achieve, and that is, as you stated, the Bull Connors, you know, the George Wallaces.
Right.
That's because they were saying that we don't even want you in the classroom to compete. Now, truth be told, were there black lawyers? Of course there were. Were there black politicians? Of course there were. Were there black legislators? Of course there were. Because they were in an area where they were allowed to compete. Not because somebody said, we have to have black legislators or black lawyers. It's because they were in an environment where they competed, they took the test, they passed them. Because my argument would be, how were there black lawyers in the 1800s and in the early 1900s when no affirmative action existed? How did they achieve it? They took the same exact test that their white counterparts took, and there were black lawyers.
How did Ralph Bunche get what he achieved? How did the famous agronomist, you know the one I mean, that discovered the many uses for the peanuts, Dr. Jesus, his name escapes me. You know the one I mean.
I don't know why I'm not recalling it. Hey, I got to put on a call. He actually wants to chime in. Joe in Michigan is on the line. Joe, thank you for calling us again. I spoke to you a little while earlier. Thanks for joining the show.
Yes. Hello. Thank you.
No problem.
You're looking for the name Harvard Washington.
No, Carver.
I believe that. Pardon?
Oh, George Washington Carver.
That's it.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Correct. In terms of affirmative action, I would just like to quickly comment. This past recession, and I say past because debatably we're still in it or in the ending phases of it, blacks have been disproportionately affected. And the marginal gains that were achieved by the black community in the 1990s in terms of achieving middle class status has been nearly completely eliminated. With that being said, I don't believe that affirmative action should be an issue. I think that, personally, not to change the subject, education, health care should be completely subsidized. And we transcend race by doing that, and we truly give an equal starting point for everyone because you don't have the haves, the have-nots. You don't have individuals starting out in the ghetto who are born prenatal care right from the start, prenatal care being completely, paling in comparison to prenatal care of a white suburban woman who has health care benefits.
Mm-hmm.
From the very start, what I'm simply saying is that blacks are marginalized economically, socially, their physical milieu, they're being constantly undermined. And if we were to subsidize economically, socially, success or the potential for success, I think you really create an equilibrium to where everyone in America has truly the potential to obtain middle-class status or above. And once again, when you subsidize these kinds of things, it's really investment in almost infrastructure because you have more capital flowing into the market, more taxes, which equals more physical infrastructure, better educational systems. It's all interconnected. So
that's simply
food for thought.
Well, no. I I'm listening to everything you're saying. The latter part I agree with to a great degree because you believe that should be the end result. The end result should be, of course, more taxpayers, more revenue through government and those who are fall by the wayside. Of course, you can help them better and more. Understood. But let me go back to what it is that you said about what a black family might deal with, as opposed to their counterpart, a white family, as far as prenatal care. And I don't want to cherry pick this in one particular way, but I want to deal with what it is you said based upon that. To assume, and I'm not suggesting that you are, but I hear this a lot within left-leaning circles, that they say that it's more likely that a white family will have health care as opposed to a black family in this country. The odds may be true on some scope, but I don't believe all. And here's why I say that. You marginalize whites in this argument by using that as the template of your argument for blacks to have certain things. What the issue should be is there should never be permissible behavior allowed in this society so that they can get a safety net. What I mean by that is if you've got a structure of politics that says, I'm going to give you $3,000 for every child that you have, knowing that, that product, that sort of statement is going to get certain individuals to just have children for the sake of a government subsidy, that is irresponsible. And then we say that is some sort of way of, evening out the playing field makes no sense to me. What I'm saying in this case as far as education and healthcare is not something deserved by any individual. We believe that healthcare in this country is something that you have to pay for. That's the only thing that most people agree with, that it's something that you have to pay for. It shouldn't be for free. It cannot be for free, because if that's the case, why would anyone want to become a doctor, a nurse, a health practitioner if they're not going to get paid? Because those jobs are careers as well. We don't just churn out doctors and nurses and physicians like some sort of mill. These people take those jobs because not only do they love what they do, but because they're paid to do them,
and
those jobs. And they work hard to do those things.
Funny you should say that, Reese. I was talking to my surgeon the other day, just before he started chopping, and he said to me he doesn't know if he's going to stay in his profession until after the election, whether he'll be able to continue in his profession.
There's a lot of doctors that are saying the same thing all across the country.
What you're saying and what I'm saying, they're not the same thing, because I'm not advocating, and nor is the Affordable Care Act advocating a complete government takeover of the private sector health insurance industry. What it is doing, though, is it's regulating it further, saying you cannot discriminate based upon pre-existing conditions. So if I have had cancer in the past and I go to Blue Cross Blue Shield, they can't deny me and they can't turn me away, which is completely immoral. In the richest country on the face of the planet, you have individuals dying out on the streets, not only due to homelessness, but due to the fact that they can't afford health care. And it's not about
nobody does
it's not
afford
it's not about the incentivization. It's not about
the
incentive.
Joe, let me stop you right there, and I'm gonna let
sure.
you continue, because I want to go on. You're absolutely right about the pre-existing condition function of the Affordable Care Act. But unfortunately, we all know that the Affordable Care Act, if that's all it was about, pre-existing conditions, then there would be no argument by anybody about this law. There would never be an argument. If that's what we wanted to ensure for every American in this country, that they couldn't get health care because of a pre-existing condition, if that was the staple, the bottom line
sure.
of this health care, no one would have an argument with you, because we would all say, that's right, somebody should be able to get health care if they had a pre-existing condition, and that would be the end of the argument. But we know that what this health care act was clearly about was about saying we are sick and tired of the healthcare industry being able, in Obama's words, not mine, to write their own rules as a business.
Okay. Now, if I may get in there for a second. Now, with the affordable – and just quickly addressing your previous arguments. Now, and I don't think personally that the Affordable Care Act goes far enough, but with that being said, when – the government subsidizes health insurance, as it will do, and you have to understand the Affordable Care Act, for individuals who have health insurance, you will keep your health insurance via the private sector. The individuals who are not covered currently or who cannot afford to be covered will be given a subsidy. Now, well, that subsidy will
be
paid for.
What good is it to be able to have a doctor, Joe, if the doctors aren't there and they're leaving in droves?
Now you're talking about social stratification. Now, with social stratification, we're not setting up a communist system where, and this is all theoretical, mind you, when you have everything subsidized and everyone's equal, which we're not advocating for, that all of a sudden this will to innovate disappears, or this will to climb the ladder of social stratification disappears. That what we're doing is, doctors are still getting paid a wage. They're still getting paid at the end of the day. They're just not getting paid, they're getting paid even more than what they would have otherwise, due to the fact that they have more customers, due to the fact that it's a pure mathematical equation. You're putting more people into the system.
Joe, that's not 100% true.
That's not true, Joe. They've come up with a different the entire billing claims for any kind of medical claims has totally changed, and they are not getting paid what they were getting paid before.
But he's saying that levels itself out because they have more clients. But I would argue, you know, as a lot
we
of people
already have a shortage of doctors and more of a shortage of nurses in this country. We already have so many people; it's overwhelming.
Yeah, if Obamacare is that great, then why is Obama giving waivers to all his friends, big unions and big corporations? Why doesn't Obamacare give us the coverage that the Congress itself has for itself?
Okay.
Why would anybody pass a bill without reading it? And why would you have to have 16,000 IRS new hires to enforce this new tax, as Supreme Chief Justice Roberts said, and not to have provisions to hire new doctors?
Okay. Well, here's the thing, and let me address it. In terms of the IRS, that's simply a mechanism by which the Affordable Care Act is enforced, okay? Now, there's no death panel. There's no
– Oh, yes, there
you know,
is.
That is complete – it's not even hyperbole. It's a complete falsehood. What I'm simply saying, what the Affordable Care Act is simply saying, is that we're subsidizing health care for those who cannot afford it. It does nothing in the way – and if there's a shortage of – and I don't have statistics at my fingertips. I suppose I could, but I don't want to be distracted by that. I'm willing to guess that there are less doctors currently because education has become so unattainable in this country that, of course, you're going to have less individuals going to college, which you need a college education, 10-plus years, to be a medical doctor. That is a problem, and it's not due to the Affordable Care Act.
I think the problem is because of the overburdened crush of federal rules and regulations and lay it on that state rules and regulations and 500,000 different insurance rules and regulations. Doctors are saying, screw this. I'll do my work in a lab.
I'm gonna bring in Ed in Connecticut and Sal up in Massachusetts. But Joe, I'll ask you one question real quick, and then I'll bring the guys in. If you can answer it. So you don't have any issue with the idea of whether or not it's argued and whether or not it's true that more doctors are leaving the profession or will be leaving the profession within the coming years. But let's say those same doctors were there. Are you still okay with the fact that now they will get some 10 million new patients for them to have to deal with? You're okay with those you're saying if the numbers of doctors stay the same and 10 million new clients come on, you're okay with those doctors taking on the same client?
Quickly,
there are two factors one of which I've already explained, which is the education is becoming very unattainable for the vast majority of Americans. Secondly, you have baby boomers who are exiting the workforce. Hence, yes, you're really this capitalistic notion is constricting the available amount of healthcare workers that we do have. I would say that most certainly.
Okay. Barry, go ahead and I'll let
you know. You ought to know that Joe used to be conservative till he strayed from the path of righteousness sometime this year.
Well, aren't you a recovering Democrat, Dennis?
Yeah, I'm a recovering Democrat. Touche. He's right.
Joe, what are your reasonings or your knowledge behind that education has become so unattainable
in this country. I'm sorry, I haven't witnessed that.
Okay. Well, I have, and statistics have proven that U.S. Department of Education, tuition rates have skyrocketed, and what's going on is you have many Republicans and many conservatives who want to create competition where it should not exist. Okay? So when you're talking about, and there are certain areas of the economy or domestic affairs, rather, where competition should not exist, that being health care and the other being education. That is the government's duty via the Constitution, depending upon what interpretation of it you do have, because people interpret it no matter which side of the spectrum they're on, has a duty to supplement any disparities that may exist in society. So when you allow these disparities to perpetuate themselves, you create social unrest, which leads to broader social problems. So in order to create domestic tranquility or even maintain domestic tranquility, you have to keep the equilibrium, the playing field, equal, okay? Now, you can throw out ideas such as affirmative action because it won't matter anymore.
But wait a minute, Joe, you're not answering my question.
My apologies.
My question was, where are you getting that? You're the only thing that you answered to my question was
U.S.
that,
Department of Education.
You know, rates are going up in schools. So that doesn't mean that education is unattainable.
Well,
he's saying that's
a fundamental reason why it's not. The fundamental reason why it's not is
correct.
Because kids can't afford it.
Correct.
If that's correct, Joe, you're saying they can't afford it.
Correct. And also we have a bloated in going to the secondary and primary levels of education, K through 12. We have a bloated military-industrial complex. And that money is detracting from the money that we should be spending in our schools. Our schools are fundamentally failing. They're not preparing kids adequately.
I used to be a teacher. I can tell you.
Schools are fundamentally failing. They're not getting the funding that they need. Okay, not on top of the fact that kids can afford higher education, they are not academically prepared for higher education. And it's a sad situation.
You can thank
competition in the marketplace for that. You have winners and losers in the marketplace, Dennis, and that's the same dynamic that's being created in our educational system.
From where I live, it's the people having positions that I don't teach, I just get paid. And what the hell do we need an urban affairs specialist for? They're getting paid $70,000.
I want to get Edward in Connecticut in on this. Hey, Edward, how are you?
Hey, Ray, it's good to talk to you again, man.
No, my pleasure,
hey,
man.
I cannot believe you let this liberal just come in here and throw all this crap all over the airwaves without shutting him down.
Joe has probably dealt with plenty of other shows where they've attacked him and probably have told him, no, you're what you're saying is lunacy. He knows I fundamentally disagree with him.
Sure.
But in order for me to really hear the other side, because, again, I have to hear what it is that they have to say. Because I don't
not
have
when
a lot
talking
of time,
pure
I wish,
crap.
I wish I had Joe in at 8 o'clock because I would have extended this even longer. Because
Joe was busy
texting
me on Facebook on the 8 o'clock hour. Plus, you never shut up at 8 o'clock. You go on and on and on until the 9 p.m. hour.
But if you're disputing Edward, what would you like to say to Joe exactly to dispute his point?
Let's chop up this healthcare thing, the definitions, first of all. First of all, healthcare. Government does not provide healthcare, and no one provides healthcare for you. Healthcare is what you provide yourself by exercising, eating right, not smoking, not drinking. Medical care is what the situation is that people are trying to talk about. Medical care is the services provided by doctors, nurses, and other institutions, which have to be paid for. Now, medical insurance is also a separate category. This is something that people sometimes cannot afford, sometimes they can't afford it. You know, sometimes you have pre-existing conditions, and medical insurance is provided by private companies, and they should not be forced in any way to take people who have pre-existing conditions unless they want to. These are private agreements between private entities. The government has no reason to get this stick to nose in the problem of pre-existing conditions and medical insurance. No one in their right mind would say, if your house burnt down today and you didn't have insurance, that you can call up GEICO tomorrow and say, hey, you know what, my house burnt down. Let me get some insurance today. You know, I need to rebuild my house. It's ridiculous.
But yet we mandate, or certain states mandate, at least mine does. I don't live on, out on the East Coast, but my state mandates that you purchase automobile insurance to mitigate liability. But if I may quickly say...
And automobile insurance, you do not have to... Hold on.
I'm not...
Automobile insurance...
I gave you an opportunity to talk.
Yeah, but you're bringing up something that is absolutely irrelevant. Not when you bring up something that's irrelevant. If Reese doesn't like it, he can shut my mic off. Automobile insurance you only have to pay for if you decide to engage in the automobile culture.
Sure.
Okay. Fair argument.
Okay. So once again, if you choose to be a participatory member of society, then you will be, if you cannot afford it, you will be subsidized under the Affordable Care Act. Now, the real issue here, and you're absolutely right, the term health care is used interchangeably. Health care, medical care, okay? And I agree with you. People should take care of themselves. People should exercise, eat right, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the bottom line being is unforeseen illness can strike anyone at any time, regardless of what your health circumstance may be. It's an unpredictable world. We all know this. With that being said, I think it's immoral that 47 million Americans remain uninsured due to pure circumstance, and unfortunately, it's immoral, once again, I can't reiterate this enough, that you could go bankrupt in the United States of America for simply going to the hospital uninsured.
Joe, I'm going to stop you because I want to chime in here real quick.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people bring up that number, 47 million, and you and I both know that that number has been interchangeable for the past 3 years. It's gone from 30 million. It started at 25. I think it went up to 30, then 35, and now it's somewhere near 47. Now, let me tell you, and I know you know this, so if you dispute it, I'll be stunned. A lot of that number is proportionately awkward for me because – what I know about that number, and when it was at 30 million, I guess it was maybe about a year and a half ago, when it was at 30 million people who were uninsured, did you know that half of that number was based upon people who were between the ages of 25 and 35 who refused to take health care from their employer, because they didn't want money taken out of their check, and because they were healthy, they thought they were healthy enough that they didn't need health care insurance. So these weren't people who were without because they had a lack of money. It was because they chose not to take health care with their employer. You do know that number is a law. It's 50%,
well,
right?
Well, if we're talking on a chronological basis, prior in 47, and I wouldn't go as far as to say that it jumped 17 million individuals in a year and a half span, but I would be willing to say chronologically, of course, we have gone through a rough economic patch where individuals have lost their health insurance for an innumerable amount of reasons. But what I'm simply – and sure, what you're saying is accurate. There are individuals out there who thought they were healthy, who didn't want that additional income taken out in the form of benefits. And that situation certainly exists. I don't think as much as you'd like to trump it up to be, but I think that that does exist. But more so, I believe, individuals who are low income, individuals who don't yet qualify for state benefits due to the fact that they've worked and they've been laid off, and they have an entire family to actually insure, what do you tell those people? Your child will have to die, ma'am, because you just simply don't have health insurance, or you've been diagnosed with breast cancer, ma'am, and we're simply not going to do further tests on you because you don't have health insurance to pay for it. Now, there is a federal law that stipulates that if you come in to an emergency room, they have to stabilize you, but they don't have to go any farther than that. What I'm simply saying is we can eliminate all of these disparities. The Affordable Care Act is a great start, but if you look at nations such as Norway, and I've mentioned this in many contexts, with Dennis especially, if you look at nations such as Norway, complete subsidization of education, of healthcare, etc. Not only do they have the highest life expectancy rates, the very low crime rates, regardless of in the mass shooting was a bigot who was anti establishment, anti-Muslim, and that's the first shooting of its kind, really, in modern Norwegian history, so let's not bring that up. The nation is just fundamentally progressive, and its citizens' poverty is virtually it's not traceable there. And many conservatives here say that, well, you know, poverty just comes with the territory. You're going to have the haves and the have-nots.
Joe, unfortunately, it's literally at the end of the show, and we're going to get completely cut off. But I really invite you to come. I want to continue this tomorrow. Can you join us tomorrow?
What time, sir?
8 o'clock till 10 o'clock, right here, same place. I'd love to have you on because I want to stretch this out for at least another hour and have this conversation with you.
It's the vice presidential debate, you're gonna, you know.
I just love it. I want to have this conversation with you. Well, no, I'm okay, fine. I'm probably going to jip part of the debate, but nonetheless, I'd love to have you on at 8 o'clock. Can you do that?
I can. 8 o'clock p.m., correct?
8 p.m. 8 p.m.
All
Eastern right. Standard Time, right here on Reese on the Radio. Where are you? In Michigan?
Correct. We
You're an
I
hour
believe...
behind.
Yeah,
an
hour behind.
No, you're the same hour. You're the same time zone.
Yeah. Okay.
Are you really in the same time zone?
I believe so. Yeah.
10 p.m.
I work in
all
Eastern
three
Standard
of us.
Time. Yep.
Okay. All right. We will see you guys tomorrow. We have got to get off because they're going to boot us off anyway. We will talk to you tomorrow. Joe, thank you, as well as Edward, Sally in Massachusetts, and, of course, our good friend Dennis DeMentis. We will see you guys tomorrow. It's Reese on the Radio.
Probably the most definitive promise you made in the campaign is that no one in the middle class would get a tax increase on your watch. Yet this week, Senator Rockefeller, several other Democrats say that this bill by Senator Baucus is a big middle class tax increase. Do you agree, and does that mean you can't sign it?
Well, I don't agree. I think that what they were referring to, and I haven't looked at the quotes, but I think they were concerned about whether or not this was actually affordable. If you're saying to people you got to get health insurance, but they can't actually afford it, and they have to pay a penalty if they don't get it, then that's a pretty big burden on middle-class families. That's a concern I share, making sure that this is affordable. But the first thing we got to understand is you've got what is effectively a tax increase taking place on American families right now. The Kaiser Family Foundation report just came out last week. Healthcare premiums went up 5%.